Welcome to Random Gaming Talk. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for video games. I'm your host Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Robert. I'd say, how's it going? You just sort of told me, but how are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's not been a super fun day, but just for the last few minutes. But It's one of those things that it is what it is. You just gotta accept and move on.
That's very true. It's very true. Cool, so we're back. We did miss 2 weeks. I had things like headaches, and I did a weird thing where, like, I think it was specifically last week, we did Breaking Bad, and I was like, right, I can easily handle doing a Breaking Bad podcast, then in a couple of hours' time, doing Gaming Talk. I mean, I've done, like, a lot of podcasts on a single day before, like, lots of, that's happened a lot of times. I can very easily do that. And then my head was just like, nope, you're not doing Gaming Talk because you're going to have a headache instead. And I just sort of, you know, when you sort of know, like, okay, I'm not going to be up for doing, whatever the thing is. And then the week before, I think it was something similar as well. Again, I know I don't need to explain where we go if we miss a week, but I still like to do that. I still think it's good to kind of do that as well, because, you know, people listen.
See, no, that's not a weird thing. I grew up in a college town infamous for being a party central. Tapping out because you got a headache is not a weird thing. Running around with half a cantaloupe on your head shouting I'm a hamster, that's a weird thing.
yeah. But I just like to be transparent and tell people what's up and all that kind of thing. So I mean, you'll have seen other podcasts in your feed this week, just not this one. So I like to explain what happens if something does indeed happen. All right, we've got a lot of interesting things to talk about today, but before we get to those, what have you been playing?
I did pick up Silksong. It's cool. Not a game I would normally play. I'm not great at the precision platformers. I did grow up on them. I did cut my teeth on them, you know, on the NES, Ghouls and Ghosts, Ninja Gaiden, games like that. You know, I played them. I love them, but, you know, you have to be honest, when you're not that great at them. And this isn't like my shooters where I openly admit I suck at shooters. I'm decent at these games. I'm too used to games where the combat is just like punch, 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 punch. And it's more tilting, Dark Souls adjacent. It's not one attack, you know, run around like a nutter in a circle for 45 minutes. But it's, you know, dodge, counter, wait for the next attack to come, which is fairly fast. Dodge, counter, things like that. It also reminded me of why I hate people. Because the amount of shit that Silksong developers were getting really pissed me off. Now, if they were getting shit because it was functionally broken, you know, that's fine. Nope, game runs flawlessly, smoother than hot butter on a biscuit. if it was ugly as hell graphically, nope. It knew its lane, it stayed in its lane, and it is beautiful for not being crazy high-end requirements. It's like you could probably play this on a 360 PS3 era machine and it would run just fine. Now, all the crap they're getting is because they had a super low budget, sold it at $20, and everybody else is butthurt because now they think that's what gamers are going to expect. Oh, God, somebody get me pearls to clutch. I expect value for my money. How dare I?
Right, yeah. I hadn't heard about any of it. I heard that the game was a little bit difficult, but I've seen Hollow Knight games
hard-ish
before, so I'm not surprised by that. I think sometimes, like, what was the last one I heard about with that? Maybe it was Elden Ring or something, where it's like, you know, these Soulsborne kind of games, and you should be expecting certain games when you go into them to be difficult. At least I think so, anyway. Or to be a certain way. That being
because,
said,
yeah,
I'm
and because it's two dimensional. Yeah. You can't really do the Souls like thing. It's more you got to learn the pattern, deal with the pattern. It's very closer to Expedition 33 than it is Dark Souls.
Okay, cool.
And then you got this whole other segment of gamers that are mad because it screws up their narrative of Xbox Game Pass game cannibalizes sales. Well, it had a weekend peak of almost 600,000. We're, what, 2 weeks into it, and there's 120,000 people on Steam right now playing it. And again, I know, not indicator of sales numbers, but those are crushing numbers.
I always think that's a good sign for, like, if you do have a single player game that you're going to play through once for however many hours, put down after week, 2 weeks, how long it takes to play, and then you still have good numbers after that, that's always a good sign. I mean, when you have something like, you know, a live service game or a multiplayer game that keeps getting served content and keeps the same, you know, player number around, that makes more sense, because obviously people are playing an ongoing game, whereas, you know, even though you can replay the game, maybe New Game Plus stuff and, you know, other trophies and whatnot, I know that that's a thing, but I would guess that more than half of a percentage of people that play single player games just, okay, they'll go through once, finish it in, you know, week, 2 weeks, however long, and then move on to next, you know, think about it for a bit, move on to next game. So I always think that's specifically a good sign for single player games, which is good. So there we go. But I'd seen a couple of things about the game. I'd never actually stepped into the first one. Wasn't because it, like, you know, didn't appeal to me or anything like that. I just didn't sort of go over to wherever that was. But I heard good things about both entries, so that's good to hear as well.
Yeah, it's one of those games that it's challenging in the sense that they want you to really earn it. But it's been 7 years since Hollow Knight came out, because this is technically a sequel to Hollow Knight. But yeah, I mean, it's a game I'll play, you know, 20, 30 minutes of it. I'm a little frustrated that it's half me being out of practice with games like this and half having shitty controllers. Normally, I don't blame the controllers, but when the buttons start sticking and don't pop back up, you can blame the controller. Amazon is doing one of their two-day sales here. In a couple of weeks, I might see if they get some of the Xbox controllers on sale. Might pick me up a replacement one.
Mm-hmm. I was just about to say, what are you playing on? But you've just answered that question. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, this game deserves a controller. Hats off to the people that could play these games with keyboard and mouse. But you need... I could not play that game on keyboard and mouse. This is one of those you have to play it on controller. And like I said, it's $20. So even if I didn't like it, you know, I'm not going to be too mad about it. It's not like, you know, you buy an $80 game and it runs like shit. And then you pass the refund portion of it.
Yep. All right. Cool. There we go. For me this week, let's bring up another social media review. I like doing these on the podcast. Don't get to do them all the time, which is nice. So I in quotes finished Death Stranding 2. I did already explain my own sequence with the game and how I consumed the story. Anyway, I'm gonna read this out twice just for to do that. This is the social media review that's attached to the link for the podcast. So the social media review is obviously sort of Death Stranding 2 is da 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 da. You know, da da da, that kind of short social media review. So I've put, Death Stranding 2 is a game that unfortunately lacks three things: substance, purpose, and reason. For a sequel that ended up being unnecessary, a story that loses its narrative sense, and a game that is too similar to its original, it's a rare Kojima miss. And then in my title for the actual review, I put a skip rating, which is of course part of our rating system. It's Death Stranding 2, and then rather than putting on the beach, because I don't think anybody cared if I did or did not put that, I put style over substance, which is my kind of overall way of describing why I'm disappointed with this game. Now, do I think Death Stranding 2 is a horrible, terrible game? No. It runs really well. It plays really well. It does what it sets out to do. But so I got 25 hours into this game, and I was on, they have these like chapters. Some of them are really, really short. Some of them are a lot longer. And I got to the end of, I think it was episode 3. I believe there's 18. I might have forgotten the number. So nowhere near even like halfway through, and I'm already 25 hours in. And I was trying to put in the effort to, like, Do the different like side stuff, like when a base wants like, hey, we lost this item, can you bring it back? But then if you bring it back, you might get an upgraded equipment or some new equipment because you get new stars, and it is a rewarding system that way. That's not really where the problem lies though. So I do still remember, because there's odd bits of opinions from years ago that I still have ingrained in my brain for some reason, even though I've done thousands of podcasts at this point. I still remember some stuff or a good chunk of what I said, which I think is important. Not every single word that I've ever said, because gosh, how many of those are there? But I distinctly remember getting to the end of Death Stranding 1, which I believe was in 2019 or 2020, in and around there. And I remember seeing the ending cutscene, seeing the ending of Death Stranding 1. I'm like, okay, I don't know where you go with the Death Stranding 2. And although you could make one, because you can always kind of make a sequel to something, I guess, or you use a name or something like that, there's always ways around it. But I remember getting to the end of Death Stranding 1 and thinking, okay, that was satisfying. It was really, really good. Obviously, it was a kind of new idea. I know it got some people kind of mocked it a little bit as like a, delivery simulator, but it had like more to it than that, and it had Kojima's touch to it, and it had human themes and all that really great stuff. But there was a distinct point where I got to those 25 hours, I delivered like the thing I was doing, and it moved on to the next thing, and I was like, okay, I think I'm done with Death Stranding 2, like as a video game, because even though I might unlock more stuff later, I know there's things like monorails and other stuff, I don't want to sit through what I'm doing right now and then wait another 5 to 10 hours or however long that's going to be. Because again, I'm trying to engage in side content. I'm trying not to just smash my way through this story and not experience like any new stuff that I might unlock, hence the star system that you get with different bases. So I was trying to sort of do it all that way, and I thought, okay, I still love Kojima's work and his ideas, and even though I'm not kind of seeing, even at that point in the game, I already wasn't seeing the sort of purpose of this sequel, because people talk about unnecessary sequels and you didn't need this and that. This is the first time in a long, long time where I looked at any sequel, or like second season, I suppose you could say, or like new season, and thought like, okay, this is just like, you have an idea here. I see what you're doing, and by the time I consumed all the rest of the story, I knew what the like idea was behind it. It just, again, substance, purpose, and reason. This kind of just felt like Kojima, just fancied doing another Death Stranding and just came up with, because what kind of happens at the beginning, and I don't consider this a spoiler, is someone contacts Sam, of course Norman Reedus's main character, and is like, hey, there's this new area that's opened, can you sort of do the same thing again? And even from that early moment, I was like, oh, okay, we already did that in the first game, which was like, hey, here's this area that Sam lives in, current network connectivity, delivering this, that, and the other, I see where that's going. But then when it was like, yeah, new area, Sam, can you do this and that, and it's funny that that came up so early, because you do get, it's not really dialogue options, you get sort of there's sometimes four little questions that come up, like when someone tells you something and you can ask like specifics, or you can just say, like move on if you're not bothered. And it was one of them early things, when a character gets asked to do something and you're like, okay, that they're gonna do this thing, otherwise there's no rest of the story. So Sam is like trying to be settled with Lou and live in, one of the Death Stranding bunkers, and someone comes up to him and basically says like, hey Sam, I'll look after Lou if you go and do da 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 and open up a new area. And he's doing the traditional sort of like tossing and turning with sort of, oh, I don't know if I'm gonna do it, and they're like, we know you're going to, because that's what the rest of this game is. So it just felt like, and yeah, with the narrative sense of it, there's two kind of things that are clashing here, which is, okay, I see what you're trying to do with this story, you still didn't really need to do it because the ending of Death Stranding 1 is satisfying, and I get that you do put new gameplay things in, which I didn't get to all of those, but I am just doing the same thing again. I mean, for those people that like that are sort of, I mean, again, I liked doing that in Death Stranding 1 because it was the new thing for this new IP, but I was like, oh, I'm just doing the I'm doing the same thing again, grinding up with new stuff that I haven't got to using yet. But I'm also not sort of like gripping with this story and seeing the sort of like, oh my god, I must like go through this and sort of see it. So that's when I switched to watching the cutscenes and ended up watching those and whatever else. Because like, okay, I want to see where this interesting idea goes. But yeah, so again, I don't think it's horrible or bad or terrible. It's just it doesn't work for the reasons that I've sort of laid out there. I'll just read this one more time here. So I put, Death Stranding 2 is a game that unfortunately lacks three things: substance, purpose, and reason, for a sequel that ended up being unnecessary, a story that loses its narrative sense. And again, with that, it's sort of, okay, Kojima's doing his weird Kojima thing, weird and wonderful Kojima thing, but it's sort of like, okay, it kind of loses its focus at a certain point. Anyway, loses its narrative sense, and a game that is too similar to the original, to its original. It's a rare Kojima miss. Yeah, anyway, what do you think of, I guess, my thoughts on Death Stranding 2?
There, how's that?
Oh, here we go. Hello.
Yeah, kicked off. It kicked my mic off of the channel onto something else. I don't know why.
Oh, I see.
Anyway, to restart, 25 hours is more than enough time to be into a game and know whether or not it's something you want to continue playing. As for the game itself, I never got around to playing the first game. I had Game Pass at the time, and it just was one of those things that I never got around to using it. I have no real reason why. It just, it's one of those things, like, it's like if somebody has like a restaurant that they walk by every day and they've never gone to, they don't have a reason why they don't go in there. They just haven't gone in there. It's kind of the same thing.
But no, it's interesting with the 25 hour thing, because I didn't kind of realize how long I got through the game. How long I'd gone through the game, and I saw 25 hours and I was like, yeah. And I don't usually do that with games that much, really, especially for something that, like, I was, now I don't know if I'd describe myself as like excited for this game, but I was certainly curious to see where it went and that. But I kind of just, now we know Kojima's going to be doing other things, one of which we're going to be talking about on this podcast, but I sort of just wanted him to have, I wished he'd just used, you know, the time and, you know, whatever that he used with Death Stranding 2 to have just done something else. And like, if he comes out with a Death Stranding, if he does come out with a Death Stranding 3, which won't be for obviously a good chunk of years, I might just like watch that game. Because if it's again like delivery stuff, I mean, because I assume delivery stuff would still be in a third game, because why would it not be? I would probably just watch that one. I wouldn't like skip it or miss it. And, you know, when I'm given the skip rating here, that's for skipping the game itself, not necessarily the story, so take that for what you will. So yeah, anyway, that's my Death Stranding 2 thoughts. There is a podcast out there that you can listen to where I also talk about like the ending and the spoilers and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, that's it, pretty much it for stuff I've been playing. They did drop Baby Steps today, which is Devolver Digital's new game. Not quite stepped into that much yet. That's going to be sort of the next thing I play while I wait for Ready or Not, which is that like tactical first person game. That game is late at the moment, so that's my next game. Anyway, let's jump into some housekeeping and then jump into some news, but we'll see you in a minute for some housekeeping first. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, recently on Entertainment Talk, the United cast is still continuing, as is Manchester United's current season. We've faced Chelsea on, what was it, Saturday, and got away with a 2-1 win. It was a game of what I described as wrestling in the rain. There was not a lot of quality football on display, although Chelsea got themselves back into the game near the end. There was red cards on both sides, there was a lot of rain. There was some weird self-sabotage stuff from Chelsea. We ultimately ended up with a 2-1 win, so take that for what you will, I suppose. We play against Brentford away on Saturday, so that'll be our next game, and then we'll go from there. Over on some other stuff, of course, the Gen V is back for Season 2. We had a triple episode premiere, just like we normally do with those two shows. So for Seasons 2, Episodes 1, 2, and 3, that's on the Diabolical 7. I should be doing the podcast on Thursday from now on. That is my aim, at least. I think if I aim for... So Gaming Talk Tuesdays, which we're doing today, and then Breaking Bad Wednesdays, and then Gen V on Thursdays. I think that's what I'm going to aim for, but we'll see. So that's for Diabolical 7 for Gen V. It's back for Season 2. Over on, speaking of Breaking Bad, Becoming Heisenberg podcast, we're up to Season 4, Episode 2. We'll be covering Season 4, Episode 3 tomorrow, and that will continue. Just like that. What else have we got over in the United cast? Of course, we lost 3-0 away to Manchester City, so there was that one. Then you got my Death Stranding 2 review itself with a skip rating for Death Stranding 2 with the subtitle of Style Over Substance. Says that as well. And then still got my season preview for Gen V Season 2 that was recently, as a political talk episode that I recently did. This is called The Curious Case of Lucy Connolly. She was, of course, the one that tweeted about the hotels and things like that. I'm not going to go through all that here again, but she was recently came out of prison and was greeted by reform. And then there was only what I could describe as some very strange behaviour after that, hence this The Curious Case of Lucy Connolly, and that's obviously going to be ongoing going forward. I was going to do a Charlie Kirk episode. Obviously, that whole discussion is still ongoing. I might do that at some point, but, you know, the world of politics is always evolving and something's always happening, so we'll see on that one. Over on some film reviews, Strong Must See review for Weapons. That's the run. That's the one where the kids do run. I did say run by accident, but then also meant to say run. So they run away in the middle of the night. They do the Naruto-style run, and the film is about discovering where they went, why they went, where they went, and what is going on. That was a brilliant, brilliant film. So gave that a strong must-see review. Over on Gaming Talk from a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the Call of Duty movie in development from Paramount and Activision. Talked about the 007 First Light gameplay. And a little bit of Rayman talk as well. And that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into some news.
Before you get started real quick, every time... Okay. Every time somebody says Naruto run, I just remember that back in 2020, when everybody started losing their minds, a Facebook group actually started up saying, let's Naruto run into Area 51. If you don't know, Area 51 is an Air Force base in Nevada that does the classified top secret testing of airships and whatnot. And there's a lot of theories as to where all the aliens are. The best explanation I've heard is that, let's see, they're testing experimental aircrafts. Yeah, they might look like spaceships. You know, but, you know, why apply logic to the reason? But that group got wildly popular, weirdly fast. They actually had to get FBI involvement because, obviously, it's a classified military base. They don't want a whole bunch of randos charging into it. And then people memed the hell out of it. Somebody sipped. Somebody jumped in with the mean, let's run in, dodge the bullets, and clap them cheeks, which made other people meme the whole gag of aliens and probing with the caption, "What was that you said about clapping cheeks?" And that was just a funny, funny bit in a really insane time.
It was indeed. Yeah. There is a little it's not really a reference per se, but there's a line in the film, because there's this mystery of like, okay, one kid from the classroom didn't run with the kids, and why did he not? And what's if and he gets obviously sat down by police at one point to give a statement, and they say, what was it? I don't remember the exact line, but it was like, did your friends get influenced by like something they saw on TV? I don't know if that was like a nod or a reference to Naruto, and they don't take it any further than that. But I thought that was quite an interesting bit. So, yeah, you can check that out as well. I think that's on VOD for people that want to watch it. I don't think it's on the big screen anymore, but if you can get out to see it on the big screen, highly recommend it. Very, very good film. Anyway, that's it for all of our content at the moment. Let's jump into some news. All right, I got a good chunk of things to talk about today. I'm just gonna go down my list. That's probably the easiest way to do this. Speaking of one Hideo Kojima, the of course game director of many different games, including Death Stranding 2, and of course runs Kojima Productions, put out a new teaser trailer today. I say teaser trailer. It like Kojima doesn't do short trailers, does he? This one was like a 3 minute teaser for a game called OD. Which I don't know if that like stands for something, but OD, and the trailer itself is called Knock because there's some knocking on doors and things like that. A teaser from Kojima stars there was three names that came up at the end, which was Sophie Lillis, Udo Kier, and Hunter Schafer. I'm gonna guess that Sophie and Hunter are the two most probably recognizable names there. I've seen Sophie in a few things, and of course Hunter is known for one of the main roles on Euphoria, alongside Zendaya and, of course, Sydney Sweeney. Those are sort of the main three people from Euphoria, all of which have been linked with, different Marvel and DC roles. We'll see who gets what, I suppose. But yeah, all three of them are going to be in this new game. It's only Sophie that is shown in this teaser. And essentially, this woman wakes up. There's like a knock on a door or something. She opens a door. She starts lighting candles. I'm simplifying what the trailer is about because I'm not going to do a bit by bit by bit recap. Lights some candles. There's one that's like a mini little head that goes on fire. And then there's some rumblings behind her. The camera goes behind her. And there's this monster of some sort that captures her. I doubt that it kills her because I assume she's one of the main three characters, which is one of these three people that are in the game. But it could be some sort of psychological horror thing and whatnot. It looks very, very good. It did get pointed out that because this game is not being developed on the Decima engine, which I believe Kojima Productions and Guerrilla Games, of course the Horizon developers, I think they shared that engine for those two games. I think there was another game that used that as well, but I can't quite remember. But I think Decima was used for the Death Stranding games, both the Horizon games, and some of those as well. So I know that that's not to be confused with Konami's, I think it's called the Fox Engine, which was what PT was made with, or I think is what it was made with, and they're kind of stranded with that over there. It looks very, very interesting. Of course, we can't quite get a grasp on like a lot of what's going on here because it's all very weird and mysterious. Now, again, just to reiterate my stance on, graphics, I don't particularly care about graphics. It's at sort of the bottom of my like when I go to play a new game, it's at the bottom of my sort of I hope that this thing is good at doing this. I want like I care about other stuff with games, but that doesn't mean that I can't notice or appreciate when graphics are really, really good. And my goodness me, the facial animations on Sophie's character here are like, some people were saying in the comments that some of the best they've ever seen, like on a, like the detail on a human's face was pretty incredible. Something that's been pointed out as well, that because this isn't on Decima Engine and it's on Unreal Engine 5, is how, I mean, you know, things like Death Stranding, Death Stranding 2 still look amazing, obviously, and things like that. That's on the Decima Engine, but yeah, this is using Unreal Engine 5, and some people were talking about, like, okay, Kojima's going to get, like, really, really great use out of it, which he certainly has, at least if there's 3 minutes or anything to go by. So looks cool. This is the, so from what I remember, because Death Stranding 2 has now come and gone, I think Kojima has got two games in development, which is this. This is the, I think this is the specific Xbox project that he was doing. And then if you remember from about a year ago, 18 months ago, when he was with Herman Holst, I think his name is, on like a PlayStation showcase, he teased, I can't remember if he teased another game and then also said he's going to be doing something in the espionage genre, which of course where he comes from, like with Metal Gear and everything. So I can't remember if that's two games or three games, but we'll find out eventually. It's interesting at the end of this trailer, because you know how Xbox has been, you know, a bit more open with sharing when it comes to games, hence, you know, one of the Forza games is on PlayStation, Gears of War 1 just came to PlayStation, which is obviously a big, big thing. So it says Xbox Game Studios on this, but it does say, like, this is for everyone, so I'm going to assume this is going to come out on PS5, probably PC as well, and then probably Series S and X, if this could run on Series S, but we'll see. Which is great. I think that's pretty good with all that. This is quite a, I don't know if you did see this, because it's quite a fresh trailer from today, but yeah, any thoughts on this looks like Kojima's next adventure? Any thoughts?
Well, I haven't seen this specific trailer. I have seen some Unreal 5 tech demos, and when they do it right, they really, really do it right.
Oh, yeah.
That's the problem that I have with it, is that I heard this the other day from another podcast. It was talking to developers. Apparently, Unreal doesn't give a whole lot of training to people in using Unreal Engine 5.
Okay.
According to the person on the podcast, Unreal will show up, install everything, and then they get like a week tops, and that barely covers anything, which is why you've had so many games come out this year that use Unreal 5 that are just like dog shit. Because of Unreal 5, so.
But it's a very, very good first teaser. It gives you, I guess, you know, people can break that down if they want to. But, yeah, again, there's, like, weird and wonderful bits and pieces in the typical Kojima style. Some people have wondered that, okay, if you take Metal Gear and you take PT, forget Death Stranding for a second. If Kojima is, because obviously he's probably never going to work with Konami again, I'd be very surprised if that happened, and he doesn't need to. He's got his own game studio with Kojima Productions, and obviously there's many doors open to him right now. I mean, if he approached like somebody and said, hey, I'm making this game, do you want it on your platform? I very much doubt that they, you know, wouldn't reject him. Even if whatever they think of the game, it's, you know, you're getting a Kojima game. That's a, you know, very, very big thing. So
yeah. Did you see the other Kojima announcement that came out today?
I did not. What was it?
Oh, it's fucking hilarious. Kojima is partnering with Mitsubishi UFJ Financial Group to launch a Kojima credit card.
Oh.
And people are already memeing the hell of it out of it. Calling it Debt Stranding.
There you go.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, that's pretty good. What was I going to say? Yeah, if he can do this, I wonder if he's aiming for, okay, because he's not going to get back to Silent Hill. Obviously, there was the PT game and all that sort of thing, and he's obviously not going to get back to Metal Gear specifically, because that's locked behind Konami. If he can turn whatever, because we haven't seen anything from this new espionage game, which is the other one, if that can, like, serve as his next Metal Gear platform, and then whatever this is can serve as his next horror platform, and he can kind of use that going forward. Whether Konami would try to sue him for something like that, I don't know. It depends what kind of stuff he did or stuff that he used. Now, I know that there is that one character in Death Stranding 2 who looks a lot like Solid Snake, but I think that was maybe just a nod or an Easter egg, because that character was not really... Yeah, it's a totally different sort of world anyway, so that doesn't really allow... It was a cool kind of thing, but that was what that was. So, yeah, very good teaser. I'm curious to see where this goes, what we get next. I'm not familiar with Udo Kier, but I do know Sophie Lillis and Hunter Schafer as well, so I'm looking forward to seeing all of them. Plus, there'll probably be some other stars in the game as well, so we'll see. Speaking of PlayStation and sticking to it, which I'm going to actually do for the remainder of my news, we did get a lot of rumours about a PlayStation Showcase or a State of Play. It did get confirmed today that we do have tomorrow, convenient kind of timing. A State of Play confirmed. It's going to be about 34 minutes. We do know that Saros, I think the game is called, the next Housemarque game with Raoul Cooley, is going to be there because the developers themselves said, hey, we're looking forward to showing you the game. So that's going to be there. So I thought we could do some, there's some more obvious predictions we could do, but again, just do some classic predictions as to what we think maybe will and won't be there. So, obviously Saros is going to be there. I don't think Intergalactic is going to be there. And I think, because these are my main sort of three things, which is, okay, Saros is obviously going to be there, Intergalactic... It could be there, but I don't think it's going to be there. I think you're going to see Intergalactic, which obviously Naughty Dog's, Neil Druckmann's next game. I think you'll see that at the Game Awards next. If Wolverine's not in this show, in this State of Play, I think that gives some nervous signs for the game. Just because, now I know that there was the whole data breach leak thing, and that's not easy for anybody to deal with, and they obviously had to take time to recover from that while carrying on making Wolverine. Plus they came out with, like, what was it, Spider-Man 2 in that meantime. I can't remember if Miles Morales was before or after. I think it was before that, but they came out with Spider-Man 2, and then there was all these talk about, like, a DLC stuff, which I don't think was ever properly talked about from Insomniac. I know we've covered that before. And then there's been some rumours and some talk about a Venom, like, smaller spin-off game, like a Miles Morales-style sort of size of game, which would be cool. But, because I think, now I don't know about, like, gameplay or a date or anything like that. I think what you could do, I think they'll open the show with Saros, because I think that will be their main thing here. And I think you end with Wolverine. I think what you do is you sort of almost re-announce this game. Now, the game has been announced. The game is in development. It's not been announced as cancelled. So, it, you know, that status remains the same. I think if you just do, like, a teaser trailer kind of thing, and then slap a 2020, whether it comes out in 2026, but nobody knows, whatever, you, like, sort of re-announce it, you maybe show a bit of a different scene, but you do a teaser trailer to end it with, show the claws or something, and you say 2026, just to kind of, first of all, remind people, because it's been about 3 to 4 years, maybe even 5 years since that game was announced, just to kind of remind people that that's there. I don't know if you'll get that and a Venom game in the same State of Play, because again, we only have 34 minutes. They'll probably show, they did say that with Saros, I hope I'm saying that name right, that we're going to see some gameplay in the summer. It's, I guess, technically still the summer, although I am cold right now, so but getting towards the end of September, they said that we'll see it in and around the summer and some gameplay, so that's going to be a bit of that here. Ghost of Yote is also out in the next, 2 weeks? That's like 2nd of October. I've noticed they've been putting out bits and bobs of trailers, but you're going to want to slide that in there as well, just to get one more big... I don't think they'll focus on it, but I think you'll get like another trailer or something similar. Ghost of Yote. There'll be some other bits and bobs. There'll maybe be some VR stuff in there. I think it depends on how much time Saros takes up, because that could be 5 to 10 minutes. So yeah, I would go with, yeah, Saros obviously, yes. Wolverine, I don't know if you go yes or no, but I would hope that that is, and I feel like that's a sort of, hey, you saw all this stuff, now remember this game that we had in, or have got in development. So I think you end with Wolverine, so I'm going to go with a yes for that. I just couldn't really see Insomniac going, okay, here's Wolverine and Venom, or whatever this spin-off game is supposed to be, if it is even in development. We don't know if it actually is. I think you go with that. Again, I don't think Intergalactic is here, because I don't think that you're going to shove Saros, Wolverine, Venom, Intergalactic, and Ghost of Yote all in one 34-minute state of play. Sony doesn't really do that. You would maybe do that if you had like a 90-minute showcase, but this is not a 90-minute showcase. Because you also don't want to be like, hey, here's these four or five big games, now try and remember and be excited for all of them, you know? So I think that they'll take a couple of games out. You'll maybe see some kind of, like a Death Stranding 2 reminder, or like some DLC or something. I remember Death Stranding 1 had a couple of bits and pieces of DLC. But yeah, there may be some VR titles. If, again, it depends on how much time Saros takes up, I suppose. Yeah, but anyway, I think you start off with Saros, you do some other stuff in the middle. I don't think I don't think Venom's going to be in it necessarily, because I think that you end with Wolverine. But because if Wolverine's not in here, I don't know where it's going to be next. Because I can't see if Sony's going to have obviously games other than Intergalactic as well. If you do this here, so this is in September, like we're what, near the end of September, you show a couple of still big games, you know, Saros, Wolverine, and Ghost of Yote, and then save Intergalactic for the Game Awards alongside other games. Yeah, if Wolverine's not in here, I don't know where else it shows up. Unless you do, because if you do like a 1 minute teaser and you bury that in like a 4 hour Game Awards, I mean, people will remember it, but that feels better to do here. So we'll see. Anyway, what do you think they might show tomorrow?
Hard telling, because they never really confirmed anything. One thing I can pretty much guarantee they won't show is Marathon. If Marathon shows up there, I will lick the underside of my shoe. And I'm not even joking about that. I'm not hyperbolic. I will take a picture of my tongue on the underside of my shoe and not care one bit. I mean, they haven't technically officially canceled that game, but
they should.
Well, one, they should, because of all the stolen art. I mean, it's not even like a little stolen. It's like you stole the tomato sauce for a pizza. You can't really get rid of the tomato sauce all that easy. Mm. So they really have to redo all the artwork. And then they have to go through and confirm all the artwork is original and not stolen.
And also,
and they haven't
get people excited for the game. I don't think there's like any, even for like Destiny Bungie type fans, you know, sci-fi first person shooters. I'm not hearing like anything around this game anymore.
Yeah, so. Bungie's too busy pissing off people with their latest Destiny 2 update. Mm. But yeah, no, that's the only game that I can't 100%. Confirm won't be there.
I don't think it'll be
that's
there.
That's a Sony product. It's like I can guarantee, you know, Duke Nukem Forever probably won't be there. You know, that's a...
I don't think so. No.
That I don't mind saying at 100%.
Yeah.
Because there's not a less than zero chance it'll be there, but I would be floored if Marathon had, outside of saying, I'm not counting if they just say, hey, we're working on it. I won't count that. But like, if we get any kind of like a teaser trailer or a gameplay drop or anything like that, yeah, that ain't going to happen.
Plus, I think it would get a bit overshadowed anyway by what's possibly going to be here. The funny thing is, when I was searching through my mind of like PlayStation games that are likely to show up here, it just wasn't in my brain. So, yeah. What do you think about Wolverine?
They got a lot to deal with right now. Mm. I wouldn't be surprised if it was there. I just don't know if they'll show it because of some of the background controversy.
Right. Yeah. Do you think Venom would be more likely, or just neither of those?
Neither.
Yeah. That's the thing, from all this, like, oh, there was a Spider-Man DLC, oh, there's a Venom side game in development. I haven't heard, like, I've only heard those things as random rumors. I haven't heard them as any kind of anyone proper talk about those, because then the only thing I've you could guess that's in development from Insomniac's obviously Wolverine, and then probably Spider-Man 3, but that's going to be obviously a few years after. Well, like Wolverine's probably next, and then probably Spider-Man 3. Don't get me wrong, I'd be very happy to play a Venom game. I don't think I should be looking forward to or excited for something that I'm not even sure is in development, because no one proper has sort of talked about it. So yeah, it just reminds me, I don't know if you remember the podcast, because it was like a good few months ago, when like I think Insomniac or someone said like, oh no, there is no DLC in development, and everyone got really, or some people got really annoyed. And I remember being on the podcast thinking, but Insomniac never said that they were doing that, or at least officially they never, maybe there was some concept stuff or some ideas, but I don't remember anybody ever saying like, oh no, we are working on a something something. So therefore I was not excited for it, because I didn't think it existed. So anyway, but yeah, that'll obviously be a talk for next week's podcast, with the state of play, to see what they show in the 35 minutes. I'll have to wait and see what happens. Let's go to, I don't know if you put this on the rumor mill or where you'd put it. I guess I'll leave that up to each of you individually. But we have some fun teaser stuff and information on some intergalactic information here. And then there's some Last of Us teaser stuff, or possibly Last of Us teaser stuff. We don't know what this is actually for, of some screenshots and some photos of Ashley Johnson for some reason in mocap suit. But we'll get to that in just a second. I have some stuff to read here. So Neil Druckmann did a recent interview with, this article was from Variety, but I can't remember if the interview was from them. But anyway, Neil Druckmann says Intergalactic, the Heretic Prophet, is the most ambitious and expensive game Naughty Dog has ever made, and Troy Baker is in it. I think we knew that already, but anyway. These are the next bits are in quotes. Says, what can I say and not say? I can tell you we're in the thick of it, we're making it and we're playing it. We're firing on all cylinders. I've said this before, but I really mean it. I'm really feeling it right now. It's the most ambitious game we've ever made. It's the most expansive game we've ever made. Maybe the most expensive by the time we finish it. Says Troy Baker is in the game, and it's been 5 years since I've worked with Troy. Of course, last was part two, as Joel was the last time. And I got to do it again, and it was a lot of fun to be on the stage with him again. I guess he's not counting his, like, because Troy did play a character called James in season one of The Last of Us, which was in 2023. But that he was kind of a side character, and I don't imagine Troy was on set for that long with that character, because obviously that was with Neil as well. But I'm going to guess this isn't more of like a main role rather than like a one episode sort of side character. So I guess he means in that way. I remember when we talked before about like Halle Gross, who's the other writer and director on part two, who also works with Naughty Dog, when her and Neil both said like, hey, we're having to step back from The Last of Us TV show because, you know, we still have Naughty Dog to work on, and he's the studio head and he's obviously very busy, and they're probably getting towards quite a big part of making Intergalactic. So while there were people, you know, kind of pissing and moaning and getting frightened about that or whatever, it was just, okay, he is the studio head of another studio that's not involved in a TV adaption of a different game, so he still has that to do, because it's not just him. I'm not sure if he is actually writing Intergalactic, but I'm pretty sure that he is, but that was never officially announced. He's just announced as the director, but I'm pretty sure he's writing it as well. To write, direct that, like, even just doing one of those things alone is going to keep you busy enough. And then doing the studio head stuff, so obviously, you know, doing other ideas. And then directing and writing episodes for a TV show. So at some point, no matter how, you know, creative and how much you love working on stuff, sometimes you do need to step back from projects when they're kind of at a certain point, like, you know, the end of a season, to step back and work on other stuff. Because, again, he has a full-time job at Naughty Dog, or I imagine even more than full-time. I don't imagine that's like an actual 9-to-5 Monday to Friday, is it? So he's got that he's working on. There's not a lot of new information here per se, but it was cool to bring up. On the expensive part though, games are just getting more expensive. So I'm not particularly surprised about that. I'm curious to see though, because when I did my Naughty Dog analysis, remember when I played all 15 of Naughty Dog's PlayStation games back in January, and I noticed like a through line of development. And this isn't to take away anything from Naughty Dog's games; they've all been pretty excellent. But when they do start a new IP, at least the four examples that we have: Crash, Jack and Dexter, Last of Us, Uncharted. They tend to start their first games on like a slightly, I don't know if simple is the right word to use, but sort of like more of a basic stance, and then you build off from that going forward. So again, him saying it's the most expensive, I kind of wonder what that means exactly, because the way he's described the game as well is like, okay, we're not having the companion thing in this game. Jordan, who's the main character, is going to crash on this planet that's supposed to have nobody on it. So, but anyway, it's probably too early to kind of talk about that stuff because it's probably going to be at least another year or two until we see the game itself. So, who do we know is in this? We know that Tati Gabriel, who was also Nora on Last of Us Season 2, she's going to be playing as Jordan. And then you've got Hallie herself is in the game. We saw her on the screen talking to Jordan. We know Kumail Nanjiani. The guy that everybody loves, he was one of the she he is the target that she's looking for. We know Troy's in this game. We know Tony Dalton's also in this game. He's been in things like Better Call Saul. He was in The Last of Us Season 2 as well, played Joel Miller's dad in a flashback. And probably some other people. So yeah, again, looking forward to seeing more. And again, I'm not expecting to see, well, while we might get, talks and interviews and bits and pieces, which we've seen some of. We'll probably see this game next properly at the Game Awards, at least is my guess. Because we also do know that Naughty Dog recently hired capture people and, I guess people that make trailers and things like that. So we shall see. Again, not a ton to work off of here, but what are you thinking so far for Intergalactic and the people that are in it and everything else?
You say Haley Johnson?
Hallie Gross.
Okay, because the only name that's new on, I'm on the IMDb page, because the only name that's new is Ashley Scott.
Okay.
Probably wouldn't recognize her. She did one episode of the Flash where she played the Huntress.
I
And I think that was a
don't
re
remember that.
it was part of the Crisis series.
Yeah.
She played Maria in the two Last of Us games. So, and she's
Oh,
done a ton of
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, Tommy's wife in the game. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's her connection to, the studio. So, but
Yeah.
yeah, outside of that, not really a whole lot of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, 'cause she played Helena Kyle in the original Birds of Prey TV show. With Dana Meyer and all
Yeah,
them,
I
and then she
remember. Oh yeah,
reprised
because they
that
had some
role for
bits of
like,
that in, yeah, in, yeah, I remember, yeah.
yeah, for like
So.
5 seconds, and then they killed her off.
Yeah. Because I can picture what Maria looks like from The Last of Us, but obviously she doesn't look the exact same as her. So, but that's pretty cool. So, it's going to be interesting with Hallie because obviously she's one of the kind of the big, working names at Naughty Dog because she also writes and directs. But she is actually in, like, starring in this game as well, so that would be interesting to see. All right, let's move on from that. Talk about some. Let's see if we can figure out a little bit of what this is. I don't think I need this first screenshot here. Basically, Neil was saying that there's more Last of Us stuff on the way and not just the HBO show, which I think some of us could have guessed. So, of course, Last of Us Day is coming up. It is September, I should remember the date, 26th, I think it is, which is in a couple of days, it's in 2 days' time. September 26th, which is the Last of Us Day. I'm not expecting anything massive in a couple of days' time because I'm way too early for a season three teaser. I can't see part three being announced just yet. Just to make it very clear as well, not that this needs to be taken, seriously, I just can't see Naughty Dog announcing specifically The Last of Us 3 until Intergalactic is out, because I don't think, and Naughty Dog doesn't do this very often anyway, which is like have two games be talked about at the same time. Because I just think that also that like they'll keep working on, of course, Last of Us Season 3 and maybe 4 if it happens. But I don't think I mean, there's a lot of people excited, obviously, for a part three and an announcement, and I am as well. But like, Intergalactic is Naughty Dog's focus right now, and I can't see them like throwing Last of Us Part Three into that because it might take away focus. Anyway, there's two kind of bits towards this. One of which is the Sony YouTube channel. I don't know if it's also on Naughty Dog's channel. Put out kind of admittedly a bit of a random video. Now, of course, I've still enjoyed watching it because it was Neil Druckmann talking about Last of Us, and it was Gustavo was on there as well. And the main focus of that was talking about how they fit music into certain parts, and they talked about other bits and pieces. And I don't know why they did make that. It felt I enjoyed watching it still, and it was cool to see them talking about the games again. Of course, I'll never get bored of that. But it was just a little bit random, this like 3 minute video where Neil's in this room and he's talking about like how they were showing, like, you know, when they show little clips of like computer screens and you see a game in development and that, like they showed little bits of that, and then they showed bits of Gustav playing some songs from the game, and he was talking about like narrative stuff and how music fits. I still enjoyed watching it. It was still cool. I don't know why they made that though. Anyway, they put that out, and I don't know if that's related to this other thing that came out. So I can't find an actual video of this anywhere, so I'm going to assume that there isn't one. I have in front of me four screenshots, four pictures of three of them have got Ashley Johnson, who of course plays Ellie in Last of Us games, on a soundstage thingamajiggy with full mocap, so headgear and like everything else. There's one screenshot where she's standing next to Hallie Gross, who again wrote and directed Part 2. She also did write some episodes for Season 2 as well. Hallie looks like she's got some kind of script in her hand. There's another one where, you know, where they have that pretty mad setup with like, you know, when they put an actor in like the middle of this thing and there's like 50 million cameras surrounding them, like a big kind of, they had Ashley... it's got Ashley standing in the middle of one of them. Then it's got another one where someone's pointing a camera at her. She's in kind of mocap suit. And then they have this other image of the back of Ashley, again in a full mocap suit. There's a portal that's open. And then there is the hospital scene from Part 2 where Joel is revealing a little something. But it's a screenshot of that scene from Joel in the game, so which is part of Last of Us Part 2. And then from a Last of Us news thing, it says Ashley Johnson is back. It says The Last of Us Day. I do not know what this is for. Now, of course, most people would say, okay, Hallie Gross, she's got a script. Ashley Johnson, mocap suit, has to be Last of Us related. And I understand why people think that, because that is what happened before. This could be for Intergalactic. We don't know if Hallie's involved in a, you know, directing, writing standpoint with that. That could be possible. If this is for an unannounced game, or why these photos were even taken in the first place. It's fun to look at. The weirder one for me is like, okay, what's with this portal thing with the in-game scene with Joel there? What is that? Now, some people took this and said, hey, Last of Us Day is in a couple of days. Last of Us 3 must be announced in a couple of days. Again, I don't see that happening in, like, on a random, what is it? Is it Friday is the 26th? Yeah, Friday is the 26th. On a random Friday, again, Last of Us Day is not random, but, and again, Intergalactic's still on the way, and other stuff is still happening. It could be for something Last of Us related that's not for Last of Us 3, but something else. It could be for a totally new game, or it could be for Intergalactic. Those are the only real three answers necessarily. But I doubt that you would, like, set all this up, put Ashley in a full mocap suit, and then just take four photos of her for some reason, and then just... Yeah. Anyway. Any thoughts on this quite random thing?
Well, my first thought was actually maybe they had to redo some mocap because they were trying to do like an upgrade or a update and something broke and they had to re-record it. That's not entirely likely, but it's entirely possible. That was my first thought. The second part is maybe they're just doing promotional material for something else. And since everything is CGI and nothing exists anymore, they were just doing it in a mocap suit. Yeah, but outside of that, I mean, I doubt it's DLC. It's way too long for that. Like way too past that. It's not like it's gonna be for the online game because that's dead.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening, by the way. It's like, they've already talked about that before. But it's this portal with Joel thing. It's like, what is that for? But I'm sure we'll find out at some point, and we shall see. So, but it's cool and it's fun and it's interesting anyway. So we'll see what comes of it. There's still the weird, on a slightly different Naughty Dog adjacent note. I remember when Crash 4 put out this video of Coco and Crash on like a it was a animated, cartoony sofa, and they were I think they were like playing Uncharted or something on a TV, and that was like 3 4 years ago, and we just I don't know, and that wasn't even Naughty Dog because that's what was it, Toys for Bob and Activision, because Crash isn't really involved with Naughty Dog anymore, but then it was. I'm pretty sure they were playing Uncharted. I don't know. There's just these weird teasers for things that pop up now and again. And it's like, okay, what the hell is this for? So, we shall see. Anyway, that's all my news and bits and bobs for this week. How about you?
I got a lot to talk about, actually. We'll start with the bad. First up, if you have any interest in buying an Xbox console, get it now because the prices are going up in the United States October 3rd. The Series S half gig and Series S 1 terabyte are getting the smallest updates. They're getting a $20 price hike, so they're going to be $400 and $450 respectively. The Series X and the Series X Digital and the Series X 2 terabyte are all going up $50 each. So the X is going for $650, the Digital is going for $600, and the 2 terabyte is going for $800, which it make officially makes it more expensive than the PS5 Pro
Congratulations.
without the accessories.
Yeah.
Now, when they did the price increases a few months back, because this is actually the second time this calendar year they've done that, I was okay, not happy, but okay with the Series S terabyte and the 2 terabyte Series X, because at least it was, an upgrade to the system in storage. Didn't change any of the hardware specs, but it was still an upgrade. This is just, we're going to blame tariffs and macroeconomics. And it actually says that in the support page, where they say the price increases are, quote, due to changes in the macroeconomic environment in the US. So they're going to blame the tariffs. They charge more because they can. And I cannot support Microsoft charging that much for consoles. Because this is the wildest generation because they keep raising the prices. There's literally never been a console generation to where 5 years into it, prices are going up.
I don't support anybody charging that much for a console, so
Yeah, I would not recommend it. I mean, if you're already at 800, might as well just get a
Jesus.
PC. I mean, $800 will buy you a very respectable PC. It's not going to be playing, Call of Duty at 300 frames a second, but if you just want a gaming console, it'll do a ton of games.
Does anybody need COD at 300 frames? I guess for people that jump and slide around all over the place. So,
It's one of those things that they want to be able to say they did it.
not for any specific purpose. It's a shame this is happening. I was kind of just thinking just then because when you said about 800 is not acceptable, which I agree with, and also 700 isn't because, I remember when I myself took the piss out of the PS5 Pro when it happened, and I made a whole podcast comparison comparing it to the PS3, which I really enjoyed doing. But I really, I, unless Like, okay, five at this point, 500 for a launch console for something is considered normal. I understand why. Like, you know, when a brand new console comes out, but again, if you're doing increased storage for stuff, then okay, that costs more. So you put the price up for that. So let's say if you had, let's say just for, it's just an example, like a random example. If you had to say new brand new console that came out, and they said like, okay, 1 terabyte is $500, which I consider quite normal, and then like 550 for 2 terabytes. It's okay, at least you have a reason why the other one is 550. And then obviously if you go more storage, it would cost, you know, $50, I guess, per thing is sort of the way that we do that. I know that you can obviously buy these consoles and then buy more storage and do whatever, but that at least makes some sense. But yeah, $800 is pretty wild. I wouldn't recommend anybody pay that much. Obviously, if you're one of them people that's like, that's just nothing to you, and you yourself are happy to do that, and you're happy to vote with your wallet in that way, then you know, we always say vote with your wallet when it comes to any price of anything, really, I suppose. But it's funny how, have you noticed how, like, because the PS5 Pro came out, everyone kind of took the mickey out of it, and you know, for very justified reasons. And then it's like, okay, that gets raised, that's 750, and then it's like, okay, you've just made that more pathetic by having this admittedly needless console, because the PS5 normal still works perfectly fine, and your games still look amazing on those. And then you go 750 for that. That was just a price rise, I think. I don't think that was a new like part to it. And then this goes a step further, which is 800. But I mean, if you to then say like, okay, is a 700 to me, is a 750 PS5 Pro like worth more than an $800 Xbox? I would say the Xbox is worth more in that regard. Like, if you're just saying for the, I'm not gonna sit and break down the whole thing because it'll take me ages, but like for, because there's only $50 of difference there. Like what both consoles could do and what you might have. But obviously won't be buying that myself because I wouldn't do that anyway, and I also already have a Series X. But yeah, hopefully these don't get any higher, because you know, we've crept up from 500, 550, 600, 650, then 700 Pro, then 750, and now 800. Like, let's just calm down a bit on this. So what was the Switch 2? Was that like
450, I think.
450.
Yeah,
I know that sounds much lower than the amounts we've said, but that's not worth that to me. So, but again, that's not worth that to me. So, I vote with my wallet, and I don't pay the 450 for a Switch 2, or I don't pay £0 for a Switch 2 because I'm not interested in one. Although, if you gave me one for free, then I would, yeah, a different thing. Anyway, yeah. What are your thoughts on this?
I think the price is ridiculous.
Oh yes,
And
yeah,
as
super.
somebody who owns Microsoft stock in an investment portfolio for my 401k, is this going to make me sell stock? No, because like I've said repeatedly, the gaming is just one of four things that Microsoft makes a shit ton of money on. I do think, and I'm not a doomsayer in that sense, but when people say Xbox has given up on consoles, this is what giving up on consoles looks like. Because you know you're not going to be selling anywhere near what you could at that price. We know that you're not going to be able to sell anywhere near what you could at that price. And you know that we know, and then we know that you know that we know. End of story.
There you go. All right, what else can we talk about?
Well, a little upbeat. Bad news in a good way. The Lenovo Legion 2 Go, which is a portable gaming device, they actually had to halt pre-orders because they sold out of their pre-orders. On a post on Reddit, Lenovo attempted to clarify on the shipment delays after the device launched last week. We know that many of you have been asking for the product delays, so we owe you an explanation. The truth is that pre-orders for the Legion Go 2 Gen 2 has substantially exceeded our projections, leading to the unforeseen delivery range extensions. The good news is that more units are already on their way to major retailers globally, so you can expect to see that availability in retail outlets and websites improving in the coming weeks. That said, we will need to cancel some pre-orders placed directly on Lenovo.com. We don't believe in holding onto customers' payments for products we can't ship in a timely manner. So as soon as our online inventory is replenished, Lenovo.com will show up updated. Availability and ordering reopen soon. So that's kind of a good problem to have, is that you're selling too much of stuff. Obviously, for the people that got their pre-order canceled, that sucks. But, I'm all for transparency, and they're just saying, hey, we sold more than we thought. We can't fill the orders. We're not going to hold on to your money. And please check back later. I'm okay with that. I am perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, me too. And I suppose when the pre-orders are back available, and they will probably boot those up, and then the people that didn't get them before can get them next time, hopefully. But no, that is a very good problem to have, is too many people want your products and you can't quite fulfill the demand. It's not the same, but similar to when, like, our site has gone down, and it wasn't because of, random stupid things. It was because we had too much traffic at points, and I've had to upgrade the servers a couple of times. So that's really the only good reason that your site could go down, really, instead of like, hey, this thing was switched off for some reason and we're gonna switch it back on. I've had that happen a few times over the years. Yeah, it's actually weird. So anyway, but hopefully, yeah, they can solve the situation soon. All right, cool. What else do you want to talk about?
Oh, well, next up, we got the absolute crash out of a developer. Now, you and I have both shit all over Bobby Kotick at Activision Blizzard,
Oh,
and
yes.
not without reason.
Oh,
He
yes.
does so many terrible things, but I always got to give credit where credit is due, because the one thing he does well is knows when to shut the fuck up. Which is a skill that Randy Pitchford for Borderlands 4 does not have. About a week ago, he went on an absolute mind-bending crash out over the launch of Borderlands 4. Now, for people that don't follow that drama, it launched bad. Not Fallout 76 bad, not No Man's Sky bad, but bad. Digital Foundry actually did, they finally released their full breakdown for it. And across the board, PC, Xbox, PlayStation, it's got memory leaks, it crashes, the frame rate turns to nothing. If you watch the review on YouTube of Digital Foundry, they're on a PS5 Pro quality mode. And there's some spots where they're getting 30 frames a second. Do you know who Conan O'Brien is? Is he a name over there in the UK?
Yeah, familiar with them. Yeah.
He was doing a promotion for this game, playing the game on Steam, and it full on crashed on him.
Oh, was it his
Like,
Clueless Gamer thing? I've
yeah,
seen a couple of it.
exactly.
Yeah.
And not even one crash. It listed like nine crashes on his PC.
Jesus. I need to
And
watch
so
that.
what does Randy Pitchford do? He blames everybody else. So we're gonna have to go through this really lengthy crash out because it's too funny and I've got popcorn. So he starts his crash out blaming gamers, as he always does. Quote, "Every PC gamer must accept the reality of the relationship between their hardware and what the software they are running is doing." And this got dogpiled and ratioed so hard, it actually got community noted on Twitter.
Happens, yeah.
Yeah, and the community note, readers added context they thought people might want to know, quote, "The publisher of a game is responsible for providing accurate recommendations and the minimum specs the consumers have absolutely no way to check on how the game is going to run before the hardware is run in the hardware before release." And then with all the self-awareness of a stoned, drunk meth addict, he goes on this wild-ass Twitter rant with Borderlands 4. Every PC gamer has a lot of tools to balance their preference between frame rate, resolution, and rendering. We appreciate the increased, incredibly high degree of passion and excitement for the game that we've been developing for so long. It is absolutely reasonable for developers to have the default settings on 30 frames a second for minimum specifications. They weren't even getting that. If you perform more frames per second, you know, turn resolutions down. This is one of my favorite ones. It is a mistake to believe or expect that PC between minimum specifications and recommendeds can achieve all levels of extremely high frame rate. If you've got low specs that you know about, you're not expecting high frame rate. You might be expecting consistent, but you're not expecting high. And he goes on and on and on and on and on and on and just never stops with the rant. I'm not going to read the whole thing because we would be here for literally an hour. If you want to go find it up, he still has not gained a clue. He still has it on his Twitter. And then he starts going after the people, you know, going after him. He's like, use DLSS. It's great. The game was built to take advantage of it. This is not a competitive FPS. And I have been led to believe that in a blind test that humans cannot detect any input lag. Which, I'm sorry, how many scientists do you have on staff that are conducting that test? Oh, don't worry, it gets worse somehow. Let me scroll forward a little bit here. Then he decides to blame the gamers again for the people that are, you know, dunking on his game, deservedly so. And he says basically the equivalent of code your own engine. And I know what you're thinking. That can't be happening. That can't be the truth. That absolutely cannot be the truth. Yep, it's true. Straight from the Twitter page. Somebody was chirping at him and said, just an idea here. Make your game look good without relying on AI upscaling. To which he replies, code your own engine and show us how it's done, please. We will be your customer when you pull that off. The people doing it now are clearly dumb and don't know what they are doing, and all the support and recommendations in code and architecture from the world's greatest hardware companies and tech companies working with the world's greatest real-time graphic engine coders don't seem to know what you know. Which, yes, obviously, that is sarcasm, but the point that is just insufferably infuriating is when he says code your own engine. They did not code their own engine. They used Unreal Engine 5. Badly, apparently, but they did not code their own engine, yet they're telling people to code their own engine, which I don't even know what to say with that.
So what does apart from ranting on Twitter, which is what it is, what is his actual role?
He is the CEO.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if he was like game director on Borderlands 4 or like what his actual. I'd forgotten. So I remember the name, Randy Pitchford. I just couldn't remember what his actual title was.
Mm-hmm. He's the big cheese.
That makes it worse. So,
oh yeah, like I said, it keeps getting worse no matter what you think. Then he goes on to another rant topic, but the same rant topic. We have come see us work, prove. Apparently, he's lost the ability to proper punctuation now. That through settings tweakings, only being able to climb to 120 frames a second on PC in Borderlands 4 with 3 or 4 year old machines. Your mileage may vary, but please consider using the tools available to you to tune your own balance between frames, resolution, and graphics. So he's basically saying, just do it yourself. And then he goes on this rant, the only one really of note. And again, this is another thing that got community noted, which is when you know you done fucked up. In this ever-continuing rant of his, he says, I know a lot of you are dead set on playing at 4K with Ultramax settings and using 2 or 3 year old hardware. You do you, but Borderlands 4 and Unreal Engine 5 are doing a lot for me, and that trade-off of frame rate isn't worth it. I play at 1440p with settings super high, and I'm super happy with the trade-off. The game looks amazing at 1440p. If you're not 4K stubborn and just want to have a great fun time with higher performance, please consider running at 1440p. If you've got a beast of a video card, you're probably fine at 4K, but if you're in the middle or close to the min specs, I would recommend making that trade, which got community noted. Recommended specs for Borderlands 4 are an NVIDIA 3080 and an Intel Core i7-12700, which are 5 years old and 3 years old, respectively. Most gamers expect a game to run at optimal settings when using the recommended hardware. And you would think, after getting community noted twice, he would dial his shit back. But no, he doesn't, because he can't help himself. And like I said, it just keeps getting worse and worse. I'm scrolling through the feed trying to get the most relevant for. Because like I said, we could be at this for literally an hour. And this is the one, this is how you know, A, they're truly unhinged, and B, they are not they're not engaging with reality anymore. So this is from the PC Gamer Twitter feed. And it says, Borderlands 4 is a premium game made for premium gamers, say Randy Pitchford. And I know you're thinking, like, this can't be real. This absolutely, in no way, shape, or form, can be real. But yep, it is real. This is from his Twitter feed as well. The minimum and recommended specs are published. The most common hardware is a 4-year-old cell phone. Borderlands 4 is a premium game made for premium gamers, just as Borderlands 4 cannot run on a PlayStation 4, and it cannot be expected to run on a too old PC hardware. Unlike PlayStation and Xbox, we cannot prevent a PC player with suboptimal hardware for the game we try to play it. So some try and get mad, and some have actual issues that we need to fix, and some need to learn that their PCs work at the high end for this specific game in 2025 and use the tools available to them to find the right balance between frame rate, resolution, and graphics. This is not a game made to be run on a 10-year-old PC. This game uses the full capabilities of modern buses, CPUs, and GPUs. If you're trying to drive a monster truck with a leaf blower motor, you're going to be disappointed. If you discover your system can't run the games well by accident or wishful thinking and don't want to try to mess with the settings or make things good enough, please use the refund feature on stream. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, tone deaf doesn't even begin to describe what this guy is.
Yeah. When you've just said, like, he's the CEO, that just like, somehow actually makes this worse. Like, if he was kind of more of a side thing to this project, or, like, less mainly involved. I mean, even if he was the director of the game, that would still be bad, but, like, yeah. But I've heard similar things about him and from him over the years, so... But yeah, it's just yeah, it I mean I'm not a Borderlands person remotely. I was never like, as soon as they announced Borderlands 4, I was just like, okay, cool. For those people that are excited for that, that's great. They know what their audience is and whatever, but it's like this is getting in the way of that. So yeah, but we'll see what happens, I suppose.
Yeah, and there's been times in my life when I've been kind of clueless on a few things, but the level of cognitive dissonance that you have to have to go on that rant over the course of several days, I honestly wonder if some of his family members might have him put on a 72-hour psych hold, because like if I was his nephew or his cousin or his brother or something like that,
Yeah.
I'd be calling him up. It's like, hey doc, I'm gonna send you this. We need to get this guy evaluated.
This Twitter feed. Yeah.
Yep. Now, granted, all sanity's left Twitter to begin with, but still, that is some wild, unhinged stuff.
Certainly. Cool. All right, what else want to talk about today?
One last thing, and it's always good to be able to end on a high note. So DICE, the developers of Battlefield 6, recently sat down for an interview for discussion on various console ports being released for their upcoming Battlefield 6 title. The technical director of Battlefield 6, Christian Buell, said, "I will say the biggest thing we did as a challenge for memory was the Xbox Series S. It does have less memory than even our mid-specs PCs. And so there was a point where I went to say for 6 to 12 months where we kind of realized that at our levels, we were crashing the Series S. After reviewing the code, optimizing specs for across Battlefield 6 and the engine itself, Buell stated that the process made, quote, whole game better and more stable for all players that we'll get to experience. Now, Battlefield 6, is one of the longer-running AAA shooting titles, but the article talks about how by focusing on memory leaks and making the gameplay better on a lower machine had amazing returns for the higher machines. He continued in his article, in his interview, "We were doing so much testing, we were collecting all this data. And once we kind of started running all our levels through it, we were able to see where the problems were after a month or two, and we had to resolve all our memory issues on the Series X, which prevented a lot of memory issues on higher-end consoles and PC." Which, shocking, shocker, shocker, if you work hard and fix the engine, it runs better. And the experience is better. What a shocking thought.
Yeah. I kind of understand from one point, like with all the things they're trying to do in Battlefield 6, which they've shown off. Again, I've not been able to play a single second of the game because of reasons I've already explained. I'm not gonna go over all that again. I still haven't received another email, but I need to look into that. I should probably try and sort that out before the game actually comes out. Anyway, which I believe is in October at some point. But yeah, with everything they're trying to do in Battlefields, it makes sense that, like, okay, with the lower spec stuff, they had more issues, especially when you're trying to do things like, leveling buildings, and there's loads of explosions going on. I mean, I've seen a chunk of the gameplay in that. Access did stream it at one point, so I checked them out. That was, yeah, I think it was David and Rob who were playing it with somebody else in the background, but it looked chaotic like it usually did, but still looked really, really good. But no, I'm still looking forward to when I do get to finally check it out. And I blame the email thing much more obviously on EA than, it's not DICE's fault, is it, that that's happened? So I'm not going to blame the devs for that. I'll just blame a very poorly designed email system for that one. But yeah, I mean, when I do go to eventually play the game and probably review like the single player campaign, I'll judge that for what it is and everything. But yeah, still looking forward to playing it. It's cool that they kind of were trying as hard as they could to sort of fix this issue, which is very good.
Yeah, and the reason why I harp on it so much, have you ever worked like a manual labor job where you're in a position in a line and then you got people in front of you that have to do things and then you do what you're supposed to do and that gets passed down to people behind you?
Kind of.
And that's basically what the memory leak thing is they're at the start of the line and they're finding the data and fixing it. And that makes the process smoother down the line because it's not just like the memory leak is only happening on the Series S. It's a memory leak for the game. And so fixing it on the lower settings either gives you the answers of how to fix it on the higher settings or it just fixes it on the higher settings. That gets into the coding, which I don't know that much about, but I know coding processes from the couple of coding classes I have taken, so.
All right, well, we'll see what happens as well when the game comes out soon.
Yep, and that's all I got for today.
All right, nice one. We have four emails to get into. Of course, if you'd like to write into the show, let us know what you think of anything we've talked about, anything you want to talk about, let us know what you're playing, any of that kind of stuff, and random questions as well if you'd like to. We don't mind those. In fact, we quite like them. Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, social media, eTalkerCare, Entertainment Talk, we're on pretty much everything, and there's information in your show notes. Abed is technically first, says, I love Matt's excitement and discussion on the James Bond game, of course, from 2 weeks ago. However, do you think it looks a little too much like Uncharted? It certainly got his eyes, can certainly see some influence from Uncharted, but it doesn't look like you've just copied Uncharted and then just, changed the look of it to make it look like James Bond. Because as I was saying with the gameplay bits that I was impressed with, it looks enough like a game where, okay, if you want to go more guns blazing, I guess like Uncharted, although I don't know if it will get to those Hollywood blockbuster big levels. I could, but we'll have to see. While you can do that if you want to, then you can also be really, really stealthy, and then you can also do anything kind of in between, which again is an interesting take from IO Interactive, because with Hitman, where it's sort of okay, you can get caught, you can get into a gunfight, that's really not ideal in that game, but it's this balance with Hitman games of you want to be obviously as stealthy as possible because getting caught means more chaos breaks out, and that game's not designed to be, a full-on third-person action shooter. But like if, for example, you get caught by someone, they got to run off and tell someone else in Hitman, and you catch them in time and get them. Chaos has broken out a little bit, but it's a bit more controlled. Whereas this is sort of, if James Bond gets caught and is instead a Hitman, then he is a bit more of the action character, I suppose. So I'm gonna guess that was probably an interesting gameplay thing for them to actually develop, and it's a very good kind of not even pivot, but it's the next kind of interesting stage for them of how they've gotten such a handle on the Hitman games and how that plays in a specific way, but then how Hitman, sorry, how James Bond looks like the next natural fit. But I suppose if you as a gamer are okay with it going to those sort of like jump around, slide around, explosions everywhere, kind of Uncharted style, then that game looks like it's going to be good for that. There probably will, it does like there'll be some set pieces that are more designed that way, like the airplane one. But I don't think using influence is bad. Like if you're saying, okay, this person's going to make a James Bond game and they've taken inspiration from Uncharted and they used to work on the Hitman games, that sounds like a great mixture of three kind of things to me. So, I do think it's got, and I'm not moaning about this either. I do think where you've gone for the more kind of younger agent sort of thing, who looks a little bit young, Tom Holland, Nathan Drake-ish kind of guy, there's clearly some smart marketing stuff there, but I think that's just a smart thing to do anyway. And it's an interesting take on James Bond we've not seen for a minute either, which is this sort of he is trained, but he's not. 40s, 50s experience, he's sort of mid 20s, and he's a bit more loose if you want to call it that. But it does look like Uncharted in certain ways, but I think that could be an interesting thing. Gosh, it's so long until it's March that comes out, isn't it? I have this feeling that game's out in like the next 2 months, but it's not. So, anyway, what do you think of Uncharted comparisons with the new James Bond game?
Yeah, if you told me that the game is a love child between Nathan Drake, Uncharted, and Hitman, I'd be like, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Visually, it borrows a lot of those styles. And it's not a direct copy-paste. It's not like, you know, PAL World, where wink, wink, nudge, nudge is totally original. Anything like that.
I still remember seeing that game at the play. It was at a State of Play, and I literally... I don't remember properly seeing that game, and I was like, why is there a Pokemon game in a PlayStation State of Play? That was my first thought. Because I'd heard all about, like, oh yeah, there's this Power World game, it looks a lot like a Pokemon game. But then me, seeing that for the actual proper first time, I was like, is a Pokemon game here? And it wasn't. That's, yeah, much more sort of copy-paste. That's not influence, that's more copy-paste. And then when they said, oh, this is Power World, I was like, oh, now I see what everyone was like, you know, talking about. So, interesting stuff. Anyway, continue.
No, that's really all I had to say, because that was my impression when I first saw the proper gameplay. Yeah, this is Uncharted by way of Hitman.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, third-person action games, you can do them in different ways. So, Harrison's up next. Says, have been hearing endless rumors about a State of Play / Showcase, but why do you think Sony has been so quiet? I don't know. They've started to get a little bit more. I mean, across the board, really. Because although we do have, like, summer showcases, summer sort of directs and whatever you want to label these things, we don't really have sort of... Okay, E3 is coming up in a couple of weeks. What do we don't really... The industry doesn't really work that way anymore, I suppose. But, I mean, for all three of them, because I don't really... I know PC gaming is PC gaming, but obviously I've not got my finger on that pulse. I think when it comes to Nintendo, Sony and Xbox, or I guess Microsoft, it's sort of, okay, once every, what, 2 to 3 months, we'll give you an update on what we've been working on. But then we'll take them in shifts of, like... Okay, in this one we'll show you 3 to 5 games, in this one we'll show you 2 to 3 different games or something. A bit like, if you remember that Developer Direct with Xbox, it was like, okay, these are the 4 games we're focusing on, we'll focus on them today, tell you about them, and then we'll just go from there, because, it's just sort of the way it happens. Why they've been so quiet? I mean, when was the last time we heard... from Sony in like a State of Play way? I think it, yeah, probably was about 3 months ago or something, maybe. They do seem to be much longer between, like when they do the showcases. But I almost wonder if, because we used to get them a little bit more regularly, I wonder if Sony, because there was one or two showcases that were like, oh, they were pretty good, you know, and I wonder if they looked at that and thought, okay, maybe we shouldn't do these as often, because I personally look at it now, when they go, okay, State of Play, 30 minutes, I'm like, okay, there might be some big games in here, but these are just going to be like, you know, 3 to 5 to maybe 10 minute sections each on, like, here's a bit of this game, here's a bit of this game, here's a bit of this game, whereas in a showcase, it's like, okay, full-blown 90 minutes, it's like, okay, now you have loads of time to, like, properly show off your, like, really, really big games. Plus, Sony has had to work their way out of this weird live service angle that they took themselves in, which Jim Ryan sort of took them down. Only one of those games really actually worked out, which is Helldivers 2. But yeah, I think it's maybe because they got a little bit more cautious, because they've certainly started doing less showcases and more just sort of, here's a sprinkle of a State of Play for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or like... here's a Ghost of Yote State of Play, here's a 007 State of Play, more focused on certain games. Anyway, what do you think?
I think it's because they don't really have a whole lot of games they can hang their hat on.
Not right now.
And this is me not saying... this is me not saying that they don't have any games. Just not big, big games that they could say, look at me, look at me, look at me. I mean, obviously... we got Ghost of Yotai, coming out, but that's coming out with so much controversy, it's gonna be hard to be able to judge sales. And I'm on a Digital Trends website looking at the rest of the year, and these are all either multi-platform or I've never heard of it. Got something called Directive 8020, never heard of it. A Little Nightmares 3, multi-platform. Ninja Gaiden 4, multi-platform. Outer Worlds 2, multi-platform. Moonlighter 2, multi-platform. Light No Fire, never heard of it. Gothic 1 Remake, multi-platform. Vampire Bloodlines 2, multi-platform. And that's really it for the rest of the year. And it's just, we're not going to get Marathon. We're not going to get Fair Games. That actually did worse than Marathon. And I'm looking at everything that's, possible 2026. And the only thing that's really a standout is Wolverine, which we might get at the State of Play, but no guarantee on that.
The thing is with 2026, it's like, okay, everyone's gonna have to avoid that game. The developers, I mean, not players, obviously. Because, like, okay, if you release your game which is half the size of GTA 6, it's still probably gonna get a bit ignored. And even for people that won't play GTA 6, because not everybody's going to. It will still be just, it will be so dominant in the news and just like what everybody's doing and whatever else in reviews and discussion that. So, okay, do you like, can developers rely on that May date? I mean, it's getting closer and closer as, time goes on, but then it's sort of, do you try and go before it? Do you try and go after it? But then, yeah, so, which I do think ended up being a problem in 2025, because it does, like, you look at this, what date did we have originally? Wasn't it November something that we had for this year? And
I don't remember anymore.
it does feel like, apart from, the Battlefields, FIFAs, CODs, everything else, the normal stuff, like apart from Ghost of Yote, which is, a couple of weeks, and then November's obviously another month away, because I've looked at that, like, the fall or autumn, as we call it over here, list of games, it does kind of feel like, okay, everybody sort of was just cautious about releasing their game in that month, and then, GTA didn't end up coming out anyway, so I do think that was a big factor. Tyler says, "Is there anything either of you would change about Expedition 33?" What would I change about it? See, because I mean, I look at the parry counter system, and while it's like awesome and just, man, when you hit that, especially when it's a combo and you go do, especially if it's five or something and you actually get all five of them, then you get not only the AP but the reward of the counter, which is just, amazing for all different reasons. I would have liked a little, because some enemies in the, and I'm trying to find like nitpicks here because that's what I've had to resort to because the game is just so good. To find, other than putting it on easy, which obviously is what I kind of ended up doing, some kind of way to make that ever so slightly more doable at certain points. But I don't mean a sort of like, hey, let's put a red light on the enemy's head when they're at the exact, like, I wasn't asking for sort of, in like the Batman games and in some Assassin's Creed games, where it's like, exactly when you're supposed to press counter because there'll be like a spark or something above the enemy. I'm not asking for that because that would take away from the reward of like, okay, when it swings at this moment or when it slams at this moment, you press it and it's got so much reward to it. Just for certain bits in, especially the later game, for that to be ever so slightly easier, but I don't know what I'm actually asking for there necessarily. There are a couple of enemies where they would have a sword and they'd like swing it around a bit, swing it in a different direction, then actually swing it towards you and then attack you. And again, I know it's all about learning the patterns and things like that, and it's incredibly rewarding, but yeah, just something to make that ever so slightly easier, but then I don't know what that would actually be. So other than that, like, whether it's good things that you could have made even better. I don't know whether it's things that weren't great that you could have made better. Because my only two small, and there were more just kind of balanced talking points in my actual review, was, okay, when you get to that tower bit near the end and you have to run up quite a few parts, and granted, it doesn't do the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth thing of, like, here's a bunch of just obstacles that we've put in your way for no reason. It gives you enemies on the way so that, okay, you can level up more as you get towards, clearly, the next boss. I know why they're there. I would have liked that to still been a tad shorter. But again, I'm reaching and nitpicking because you asked me a question. So, but it's just, man, that game's so good. I've obviously been thinking about it even since I finished it. And I've been listening to a lot of the different music from the game, whether it was like different open world parts, different boss songs, obviously the main themes as well, because it just also reminds me of the great battles I had and all the great bits of the game. So, yeah, those would be my only two nitpicks, but I honestly just, I can't think of anything else that I would change in the game. How about you?
Well, in terms of what you were saying with the parry and counter,
yeah.
The cues are there, but they're almost all audio cues, which obviously is going to be a problem if you have hearing limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like a toggle on off to where it's more visual cues than audio cues for the people that would benefit some.
Uh-huh.
The only real negative I had for the game was they don't really do a really good job explaining the interactivity with the Pictos and the colors of Lumina and whatnot. I'm a big fan of not handholding. I'm playing Silksong right now, and that game does not hold your hand. You don't even start with a map. You have to earn enough money to buy the map. Then you have to earn the money to buy the compass so that you see where you were at the map. Then you have to earn enough money to, like, put markers down for where our resting points, where our tribes, this, that, and the other. And I'm totally cool with that.
Hmm.
But the Pictos was just very non-direct in that. 'Cause I remember I was watching a streamer that actually, she got the game as a code and only was required to play one day of it, wound up 100%ing the game. She loved it so much. Nice. But she was like half-assing playing around with the Pictos, equipped 3 on one character. All of a sudden, that character had 12,000 hit points.
Damn.
And she's like, what the hell did that happen? And I was like, it's got to be the Pictos because that's the only thing you changed.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of them are very direct. Some of them are indirect. Some of them stack, but they don't tell you. Some of them don't stack, but they tell you. A lot of them can actually contradict them. Like, there's one where you start the game and die. You start the battle and die, but then immediately get resurrected. But then if you accidentally pair that with the Pictos, to where if you get resurrected, you're like all the buffs, but you've only got one hit point. Or it'll put you in inverted, which actually deals damage if you use healing spells. And nothing is permanent, because you can always just unequip the Pictos.
Mm.
But it's they really needed a little bit more of a tutorial,
yeah,
and explanation on how those worked.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's not a minor nitpick for me. That affects a lot of the game, because there's like over 100 Pictos.
Yeah.
So it's not like you get 10 or 12 and I'm just, you know, you're just being dumb by not knowing it.
Yeah.
You get several that are useful in one very specific situation, and then you never use them again. And then with the colors of Lumina, you got to farm out them, add them to, then you can get the ancillary effects. Because I didn't even know this until I was watching the streamer that I was talking about. Equipping the Pictos gets you the health benefits, like more armor, more speed, whatever. And then if you use the Lumina, you only get the benefits of, like, you know, buff speed, if, you know, res or heal other players or things like that, which I never figured out when I was playing the game. Of course, I never 100%ed it, so.
I was thinking, I think about the game now and again because it's obviously so good. I just, aside from obviously Game of the Year at the Game Awards, which it should get, I don't know how it doesn't just like sweep so many awards, like music and especially music and score. And I know you have different ones like action adventure, and then like there's a couple of like categories in the Game Awards that are quite similar. But like, yeah, I just don't think apart, you know, I really enjoyed like South of Midnight and all that sort of thing. But in terms of just what this game does, I mean, granted, I haven't played, you know, every year, every game that's still come out this year, I've still got some to play. But I just don't see how anything gets anywhere near that game to me. Apart from again,
I
the,
could
like
see
South of Midnight, I still really enjoy. So.
Silksong stealing it as, you know, a last minute substitution,
Maybe,
because it did have, you know, that amazing launch to where it actually crashed the game stores. And I mean all of the game stores for a while. It crashed the Steam store, it crashed the Xbox store, it crashed the PlayStation store, and it crashed the Nintendo store. So the fact that one game did all that at the same time, and the sales and the rating, it wasn't like 94, but some bitter people review bombed it, and it's down to like 82 now, which is pathetic.
Still quite
But
high.
yeah, I could absolutely see that game sneaking in and winning. But let's be honest, Kojima's got a game out, and Jeff Keighley loves Kojima, so he'll probably give it to Death Stranding too. I'm not happy about it, but that's what I'm expecting.
Imagine that will win some things, certainly. Like I can't remember all the categories. There's like best performer and things like that. Yeah, we'll see what happens. And lastly, we've got Beth writes in and says, "Is there any console features you'd like to see in the future?" I really do love Quick Resume a lot. I know you got, I think you got an Xbox Series X
Yeah, I
before
got a
me, and
Series
that,
X.
and you would like. I remember when you were telling me about that, and then I remember when I used it for like the first actual time, switching between certain games and that, and it just jumped straight back to where I really, really would like that on my PS5 rather than closing games and whatever else. I would also like, not in terms of new stuff, but while we're talking about features, I remember when I was on my PS4, and because the cross media bar was pretty much the same, and if you like accidentally clicked on the wrong game, it would say, "Hey, you have this game open. Do you want to? You'll have to close it to open this next one." There's been like a couple of times I've scrolled one spot too many and like accidentally opened a different game, which has then closed. And there's no, it doesn't come up with the, "Hey, you have this game open in order to blah blah blah. Do you want to do it?" It doesn't give you a warning with that. So there was a couple of times where I like didn't save or something like that, and then I ended up booting up a different game by accident. So that would be better. But then again, if it had quick resume stuff, which I don't know why the PS5 doesn't. That would be good. I know there's like the when you hover over a game and it's like, "Hey, here was your newest activity. It has the activity cards. Would you resume it? Would you like to resume it?" You can click on that, but that still boots the game up from a fresh state, and not like a resumed state. So it still closes the game. It's just a different way to sort of, "Hey, you were doing this last time. Would you like to continue it?" But it still has to boot the game up from a fresh splash screen thing. So, yeah. So I'd like that on more consoles. I'd assume that would be if Microsoft does do a next Xbox, which I think they probably will. I'd assume that they would just carry that forward. Because I'd assume with Xbox at this point, when it comes to things like backwards compatibility, which they've already got locked down, and then things like quick resume, there's no reason why that wouldn't be on the next Xbox. So, but what Sony needs to do is just like, I've used the cards a couple of times, maybe, just because if something was right there that I happen to actually want. But I would easily get rid of those and get the resume state things. I know they have like, I think it's the button next to the home button. It says switcher, and it says like, "Hey, here's you use these things recently. Would you like to switch it?" But again, if it's like, "Hey, I've got this game I was playing," click on the switcher to go back to it. It still boots it up from a fresh state anyway, so I might as well just click on the game. Long story short, so there's that. I don't know. That's my main bugaboo of the one that I do want. Because I do use my PS5 a lot more still than my Xbox. So, how about you?
Not really, because I have my Xbox that I play on. And then the PC doesn't really do all of those features. Not for my personal use, but for the people that do use it. I would like that Sony had more of their VR functionality on PC, because you can use the PSVR 2 on a PC, but it only does like 25-30% of what the actual device can do. And a smart person could fix that. I doubt that person works at Sony. If I went, you know, down the rabbit hole of the internet, you could probably find a modder or two that's already got that locked up, but, you know, then modding your device.
Yeah.
And they'll lock you out.
Yeah.
Not as badly as Nintendo will knock you out for their bullshit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would expect that. And, yeah, modding the hardware, I'm not as anti-lockout on that, as long as it's just like an account lockout to where, okay, I can't do that anymore, but I could still sell it and somebody else can still use it. You know, Nintendo's like, that machine's dead. F you.
Yeah. It's true. I can't think of any others. That's just, it's one that I do think about every day because I boot up my PS5 pretty much every day and I'm still reminded of it. So, I mean, I know like if I left COD open and I switched back to it, it would sign me out of the online thing and then connect me back, but at least it wouldn't take me through the splash screens and stuff, which can be very loud sometimes. I there's always things like, you know, certain accessibility options, graphics options, sound options. There should be more of that on certain things, but so there we go. All right, so for the podcast, obviously next week we'll be talking about the state of play and anything else that comes out in between now and then. Talk about what we've been playing. I'll be playing Baby Steps in the next couple of days. I don't know if it'll be tomorrow, but that's the like walking simulator-esque thing where you have to control the guy's legs, and been curious about that one. So that might pop up on State of Play as well, just as a sort of, hey, it's out kind of thing, because it got sort of a little bit shadow dropped. So that one's there as well. I only knew about that it came out because I had it on the wishlist thing and PlayStation was like, hey, you can buy this game now. So, yeah. What are you going to be playing for next week? Still,
Yeah, I'll bounce between Silksong. 2.3 for 7 Days to Die just came out. They also did an update to an indie game I talked about a while back, Into the Dead, Our Darkest Hour. That just got another update, so I got 3 games that I can bounce around. Nothing's really coming out. It's going to be a super time sink. They did just do a release date for a game I talked about a while ago, Super Fantasy Kingdom. Mm-hmm. It's a semi-roguelike, top-down, 8-bit style base defender / base builder game. It's one of those games that if you like the 8-bit style, you could play it and then have like, binge another season of this TV show or that movie on your second monitor, because you don't really have to pay attention that hard. Basically, you're the king of the kingdom. You make your characters do an action for a turn. You run the turn at the end of the day. Wave a monster comes in. You survive or don't. You survive, you go on to the next day.
Nice. Cool.
And eventually you'll get overwhelmed, but then you'll acquire enough money to unlock other things so that you can start in a more advanced state, and then you just snowball that.
Cool. All right. Sounds good. So yeah, we'll be back to talk about all those things and whatever else happens in the next week. We'll need to aim for Tuesday again, so we'll try and do
Tuesday's
that again,
fine.
Next week. And yeah, anyway, in the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org for TV, games, films, Man United podcasts, Breaking Bad tomorrow. Then there'll be just one episode of Gen V going forward, so there is five more, because they already launched for three, so that'll be that going forward. I think those finish the end of October. I know we've only just started, but that's that going forward. United cast, pretty much just at the weekends, because there's no more Carabao Cup games, because we're not in the competition anymore. So there's that, and the FA Cup doesn't start till January, and we're nowhere near in the Champions League, so don't look for us in that competition either. So, Man United at the weekends, more film reviews going forward, other podcasts and other things as well. Just keep your eyes and ears peeled to entertainmenttalk.org and podcast platforms Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, and Man United podcasts. Look out for all those. You can support the episodes by, of course, listening to more of them, word of mouth, and social media. And if someone mentions a thing we've podcasted on, please tell them about that podcast or the series or whatever that we do for it. There's Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers for the ad-free podcast. Have your options for those as well. If you like to, TV and film news, Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays and geektown.co.uk. There is a new Geek Town Radio out right now from today. So it's fresh off the presses. Is that the phrase? I think it is. So yeah, go and check that out. You can go from here today and get your latest TV and film news. And of course, hear David tomorrow with me on Breaking Bad for 4:03. And then, of course, there's YouTube. I haven't put anything up there for a little bit, but it's very sporadic content on YouTube anyway. But if you want to check this stuff out over there, that's Entertainment Talk Plays on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.